This is Teachers Talk Radio, and you are listening live.
Good evening. Hello. Welcome to the Late Late Show. My name is Catherine Taylor. Tonight, my special guest is Jill Batsman. I'll be chatting to Jill about her experiences of being a science technician in a secondary school. And we'll be discussing a day in the life of the job and hearing about how the role has evolved.
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and you are listening live. Tune in live at ttradio.org, or to join in the conversation, download the Podbean app and search Teachers Talk Radio. Follow the hashtag TTRadio. Tune in, talk it out with Teachers Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the Late Late Show, everyone. I'm Catherine and I'm speaking to you live from Buckinghamshire in the UK. On tonight's show, I'll be talking to Jill Batsman and we'll be discussing her experiences of being a science technician in a secondary school. We'll be discussing a day in the life of the job and hearing about how the role has evolved over the years. Before I speak to Jill, I'd just like to remind you that if you're listening in live and would like to join us, either on a post questions in the chat for Jill to answer, or if you want to call in and speak to us, then please download the Podbean app and visit ttradio.org and click on Listen Live on the homepage. This should take you directly to the show. There you can post your comments and ask questions during our conversation. Once I've spoken to Jill, I'll open up to any of you who'd like to call in. You can call in by pressing the icon at the top of the screen on your phone's app. Click this and I'll be able to connect you. So, Jill, I'm just going to bring you into the conversation. How are you this evening?
I'm fine. Thank you very much for inviting me on, Catherine. I'm looking forward to it.
Excellent. Well, it's really nice to have you in, and it's going to be a really interesting show. And I know that some of my followers on Twitter and through the retweets as well, have engaged with the post. So I'm fairly certain that we're going to get quite a lot of interest in this, because it's something that is perhaps an unsung hero role, perhaps doesn't normally get sort of the credit or the airtime that it might deserve. And I think that people are going to be really interested in hearing about your role. So I wonder if you could just kick us off perhaps by just telling us a little bit about your role and a typical day in the life of your job at secondary school as you perform your duties.
I think I would like to say that it sort of starts the week before, really, because we have an online ordering system which the teachers have to put in what they would like to order for the following week. So we're having a look at that and we're looking at the orders, and on a Friday, we meet with the team leader of science to have a look at what all the orders are, so that, you know, we know what's coming up ahead and that it's manageable and we're able to sort of, you know, get everything ready for it. We've got three technicians. We've got a biology technician, a chemistry technician, and I'm the physics technician. And although that's going to be streamlined, actually, we're looking at that we all do each other's roles, because although it works fine, it's a little bit tricky if somebody's off, because we don't always know what each other's, you know, where the stuff is, actually. That's one of the things. So anyway, we all meet and then we're looking ahead. So a typical day is preparing, you know, the orders that the teachers have asked for, getting the stuff out. The biology and chemistry technicians, a lot of their work is looking ahead at what they might have to go and buy. So if they're doing something with dissection of flowers, things like that, they would have to go and buy that equipment. That's not something I would be doing in my role, but that's what they'd be doing. So a lot of it is actually looking a little bit ahead at what we've got to do. So yes, I'm spending my day just preparing the equipment, taking it into the classrooms for the teachers, and also things like putting up displays on the wall, making sure that sort of thing is you know, ready for the students can have a look then. Different information. Yeah.
Well, that's really helpful. Thank you. And you know, I just want to sort of delve a little deeper, if I may, and ask you, how did you get into your role? What was your background? Did you have a science background? How did it come about?
I've actually been working in the primary sector for about 15 years as a teaching assistant with little ones, and a job came up. I was just looking to actually earn a bit more money, of course, as we often do. But I was actually just looking for something a little bit more challenging. Not that that isn't challenging, but just something where I could perhaps just do something a bit different. And a job came up at the school that I was in. I don't have a science background. And I was a little bit worried whether or not I ought to apply for it. But one of my sons encouraged me to apply for it. And actually, our head's mantra is that you recruit the person and teach the skill. Mm-hmm. And actually, in physics, I can learn what to do. The biology and chemistry, of course, is a little bit more specialised with the chemicals. But in the physics role, it's possible to do that role and learn it as you're going along with a lot of support and courses I've had to do. So I don't have a science background, but I have learned an awful lot.
That's great. So what kind of, you mentioned courses, what kinds of, can you give an example of the kind of course, CPD or whatever that you have engaged in as you sort of learned the role?
A lot of the learning's been at school, actually. The teachers themselves have taught an awful lot. Just different courses that pop up, really. Just how to run a prep room, or, you know, PAT testing, which is testing the electrical equipment. There's all sorts of, you know, there are available courses. Not always, you don't always have to pay for them. We're very encouraged to do CPD. Some of that is free. Quite a lot of it online is free. Future Learn, the TES do quite a lot of courses as well. And CLEAPS, which is the organisation that it's actually quite a wordy consortium of local education authorities for the provision of science equipment, and they actually oversee the health and safety, and they run a lot of courses as well. They run a lot of courses that we can do.
No, that's really brilliant. So in terms of your sort of responsibilities that you'd handle on a daily basis, you've already mentioned that you talked about the health and safety, and we'll come back to that if I may in a little while. But in terms of what you would, you know, once you've worked out what equipment is needed, sort of how far in advance are you setting that up in the room? Because schools are very busy places, and I guess it's one of those things, you have quite a small time frame to get in and get out. Is that quite a challenge?
It can be. We have, because of the way our timetable is, we have two lessons and then we have tutor time and break time, and then another two lessons and then lunch time. So there's time first thing in the morning. I get in quite early. The other techs get in slightly later. Then I leave a bit earlier at the end, not before.
Hello? We lost you very slightly. For a moment, Jill, can you hear me? You seem to have lost the sound. Can you still hear me? Okay, Jill, I'm just going to just play the news while we see if we can get you back, because I think you've lost your connection. So if you are still able to hear me, if you could come out of the call and come back in, I'll play the news and then we'll try again after that. I'm sorry, everyone.
I've always considered myself to be a caring head teacher who acts sensitively to support staff mental health. But what I found increasingly difficult was managing the negative impact on staff mental health when resolving issues related to their employment or daily work. Heartfelt Leadership has been developed by TeachWell Toolkit as a handbook to support head teachers to overcome the challenges of school improvement while supporting staff well-being. We know that difficult conversations can quickly turn into conflict if procedures are not fully transparent, understood, and followed. Our handbook takes you through step-by-step processes while maintaining mutual respect, avoiding conflict, and finding solutions.
At Bloomsbury Education, we're passionate about supporting teachers with high-quality professional development books from leading experts. Whether you're navigating your first crucial years as an early career teacher or a more experienced teacher looking to refresh your practice or take a step up into leadership, our award-winning books are here to help. We publish practical books to support teaching across primary and secondary, from the very best in research-led practice to trusted advice on inclusivity, behaviour and curriculum design. Visit the Bloomsbury Education website at bloomsbury.com/education to find out more and use code BLOOMTTR24 to save 20% on all education titles. Bloomsbury Education, books for every step of your teaching journey.
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and this is Teachers Talk Radio News.
Multiple media outlets have covered comments made by UK Prime Minister Rishi Sunak about pro-Palestinian demonstrations which are taking place on university campuses nationwide. Mr. Sunak called on university leaders to ensure the safety of all students and highlighted the importance of universities as places where respectful debate flourishes, but called them bastions of tolerance. He went on to criticise a vocal minority who were disrupting the lives and studies of their fellow students. He also said that there were some cases of outright harassment that has to stop. The meeting with the university leaders aimed to address the response of higher education institutions to the surge in pro-Palestinian protests, as encampments have appeared on more than a dozen campuses. Education Secretary Gillian Keegan has said that university vice-chancellors need to show leadership over concerns that campuses could become unsafe environments if they go down the route that you see in other places like the US. In recent weeks, TV footage has shown police in the United States break up demonstrations and encampments at universities and colleges across that country. Many images show officers in riot gear and in large numbers. In Scotland, new First Minister John Swinney has been accused of using the same old excuses as he refused to answer a question about whether he would live up to a promise made by the SNP to add an extra 3,500 teachers to the workforce. The Scottish Daily Express reports that Mr. Swinney was accused of having a record in education of broken promises. The comments were made by Scottish Tory leader Douglas Ross, and Mr. Ross went on to highlight cuts to teacher jobs by cash-strapped councils, failing to provide a laptop to every child, and abandoning a bill intended to raise standards. Mr. Swinney served as Education Minister from 2016 to 2021. In England, Education Secretary Gillian Keegan has also been on record about the impact parents working from home has had on school attendance. Speaking to The Times, Ms. Keegan said that 50,000 more school pupils took absences on Fridays compared to the start of the week, and cited working from home parents who whisk their children out of school on Friday to take them off for long weekend breaks. Ms. Keegan said curbing the rise in absences was a top priority and that data has helped target support for parents and schools. Fines which can be issued to parents have increased from a minimum of £20 to a minimum of £80. The BBC reports that students hoping to start undergraduate courses in 2025 will be able to see the grades that recent successful applicants have achieved at A-level or the equivalent. Universities already publish entry requirements for courses, but they can be flexible and let students in with lower grades. UCAS is making the changes to help students make informed, ambitious choices and to give them confidence in their applications. Applications for undergrad courses for 2025 open on the 14th of May. The new tool should allow students to search a course and see the most recent common grades held by those accepted onto it in previous years. It will also show how many students were offered a place compared with those who applied. Students who get free school meals will also no longer have to pay the £28.50 application fee. Finally, international students in Wales are reported by the BBC as sleeping rough on some university campuses, after struggling to find housing close to lectures. A long commute from affordable accommodation has seen some students sleep in 24-hour study spaces to help reduce costs. Universities Wales says it always encourages students facing difficulty to talk to their institution. Nida Ambreen of Bangor University Students' Union said postgrad international students were particularly affected as they often come with families and were not eligible for university housing. According to latest figures, there are 20,920 non-EU international students currently studying in Wales, and the Welsh universities are aiming to increase that number as they can be charged higher fees. Members of the Welsh Senate have raised the issues repeatedly over the last year. But full details of this story can be found on the BBC News Wales website. This has been your Teachers Talk Radio News with Jo Fox.
Brilliant. And we're back. And I'm going to hope that Jill, can you hear me? And can I hear you?
I can hear you. I hope you can hear me.
I can. Thank you. I'm not quite sure what happened there. But we are back. And that's okay. Fantastic. So
I think my phone might have gone to its home screen. And therefore, so I'm going to try and keep it moving. Anyway, there we are.
Fantastic. No, I'm happy that we're back up. That's all right. We're back on track. So we were talking about your daily responsibilities and getting the equipment into the rooms ready and obviously looking at the log to make sure that you have, the advance notice of what you need. I wonder, are there any occasions where the system doesn't, let's say, perhaps work as it should? What happens, and can you tell us about any occasions where you have to pivot or maybe find something at the last minute? How have you coped with that sort of thing if it happens?
Sometimes things are last minute. One would hope the equipment will work. I mean, that is something that we do check beforehand. There's nothing worse than a teacher starting off a practical and then finding that, the batteries aren't working or something like that. I mean, so that part of our role is to try to mitigate that as much as possible. Sometimes a teacher will start something and then realise they could just do with a quick demo. And that's fine. If we're around and available, we would always try to help. I mean, the point of the online ordering system is so that we do know ahead what we've got. Sometimes it can be a little bit pressured. You were asking about getting in and out of the rooms. I mean, we do have time in between lessons. Sometimes it's a little bit get the stuff out, get the next lot in. But there's a bit of a crossover. We have I can't remember what they call it, sort of walking around time, 5 minutes between lessons. Travel time for students to move around. There is a little bit of time there. And a lot of it is just being organised. That we always do our best the teachers are respectful of that for us, So sometimes things are a bit last minute. It can happen. Sometimes a teacher might not do a practical at all if they, you get it out and then they decide actually this isn't going to work or this isn't right for them. The students perhaps haven't understood the theory of it in the lesson before. So the teacher might need to go over it, and that's okay too. I mean, sometimes these things happen and it gets rescheduled. We work as a team.
That's really brilliant. I will say, because I do know some of the trainees, I know that they find the support really, really invaluable and a great source of sort of their learning as well, because when you come into a school and you're training, it can be, the practicals are pretty daunting, aren't they? I mean, could you give us an example of when you've kind of perhaps had to work more closely with a less experienced teacher just to ensure that they're confident as well as perhaps, scientifically able to do the demonstration or to do the experiment?
Yes, I mean, they often ask what have other people done. At the key stage three, it's a fairly set program for them to follow, because obviously the teachers, when they teach key stage three, it's not necessarily their subject anyway. So a physics teacher would be teaching at key stage three. biology and chemistry throughout the year. So, you know, we're always on hand to say, well, this is what this person did, and, you know, that works with that, and, oh gosh, I wouldn't do that because that, you know, that doesn't quite work, and things like that. I can't think of anything specific, but, you know, again, it's teamwork, isn't it? It's communication is absolutely key. I mean, there's no two ways about that. Communication is key. And I think we do communicate pretty well.
That's really brilliant. Thank you. I mean, you obviously have a lot to do with the teachers, but in terms of the students, do you get involved with them very much at all? What's the kind of interactions with students like?
Sometimes I might go into lessons to just help if, gosh, this phone's going to go again. No, it's not. If they're setting up something like a ripple tank, which is a bit of equipment for waves, that's quite a time-consuming piece of equipment to set up, so I might go in and help with that. As regarding sort of outside of lessons, I was a co-tutor before the pandemic. I haven't done that since the pandemic, but I was a co-tutor, so that's a really good opportunity to get to know students and for them to know actually what we do as well in tutor time. You know, we can catch up a little bit, because I'm sure a lot of students just think this equipment appears and disappears and doesn't quite know how we got there, you know.
I think they think that about us. I'm sure they think I live in a cupboard.
I'm sure they see the physics office and they think, what goes on in that room? There's an awful lot of stuff in there. There is that opportunity to liaise with students, and often they're coming to ask for things. Can they borrow something? Sometimes I get students, can I borrow something or other for my art project, you know? Things like that, little bits and bobs. They kind of, you know, they come and ask if they want something.
That's brilliant. Thank you. I mean, there must be, ever so you've alluded to, so much equipment in a science prep room. What kinds of materials are in there, and what kind of equipment do you have to maintain and manage?
When I was thinking about talking about it, you know, thinking about what I was going to say, I think it's a bit like an old-fashioned hardware store, to be honest. Mm. It's got, you know, particularly physics, actually, I think, with all the, it's almost like toys. It's obviously more serious than that. But, you know, there's so much, there's electrical equipment, there's power packs, we've got radioactive sources, stuff like radium, wires and springs and masses, which are the weights, things like resistors and capacitors, obviously circuits, equipment, motors and buzzers and trolleys and ramps, you know, it goes on and on, oscilloscopes. Mm-hmm. We're very well resourced. We're very fortunate. A lot of the equipment has been there quite a long time, but it still works. So we're very fortunate that we're very well resourced, actually. Insulation stuff, laser pens and slinkies, and, you know, the students are very fortunate.
Love a slinky.
Great fun. Students actually aren't given those because they get in a terrible knot otherwise.
I bet they do. I was going to say, a slinky doesn't last 5 minutes in our house.
No, quite, yeah. So as far as repairing it, obviously things like I have to make sure the batteries are, I've got a battery tester to make sure that they're working. Soldering as well. I was taught to solder by one of our previous teachers. So things like the PAT testing, which is testing the electrical equipment. We do have an annual test. We have contractors coming in now, but I did do a course in that and I am trained to do it. But actually, we do have an annual contractor now that does the whole school. All sorts of bits and bobs.
You mentioned the radioactive substances, and I'm particularly interested in that because when I was at university, I actually, believe it or not, did a part of my degree was in sciences, and we had to do this experiment where you had, I think it was gamma radiation, and they dosed some grass seeds with it, and we had to sort of plant them and then
next to some ones that hadn't been dosed with it and see how they grew after, you know, 4 days or whatever it was. I can't remember now, but it was to see the effect. And I remember them saying to us, you know, if this is radioactive, this radioactive material, if it gets spilled, we'll all have to leave the lab for half an hour. So don't, you know, don't pretend you haven't spilled it. If you spill it, tell us and we'll all have to go outside because that's the safe amount of time to wait. Is there anything that you're aware of in the lab that would cause that kind of health and safety consideration? Because I guess there must be some fairly, you know, some stuff that needs to be kept under lock and key, certainly.
Yes, it is kept under lock and key in a sealed box. And you have to be trained how to get it out as well and how to touch it. So the teachers are wearing gloves. They're using tongs. We're very careful. Ours is very old, so it's pretty low level stuff. The laser pens actually are probably a little bit more, you know, if they're pointed in the wrong direction. But at the start of the lesson, I mean, the sixth formers would be perhaps using, well, we might be, you know, would be using the radioactive materials more than younger students, and the laser pens as well. But you know, it's, yeah, you have to know what you're doing and it has to be tightly controlled. We do have somebody in, I couldn't quite remember how often that is, maybe every couple of years. With the pandemic, it's difficult because obviously that didn't happen.
Yeah, yeah.
To come in and check that we are following the right protocols and things like that. And the subject leader for physics has done a specific course as well for radioactive material. So he can, talk to other teachers about what they should and shouldn't be doing as well. But he's got the overall responsibility for it, for the radioactive materials. Yeah.
So thank you. That's a really good answer. And I think it's so interesting because health and safety is such a big part of it, isn't it? And I wonder if you could talk a bit more generally or with maybe specific examples, if you have them, about how, you know, what are the safety steps in place? Because certainly, you know, nobody wants an accident and nobody wants, we want to try and allow students to have the experiences when some of them are, they're not risk-free, are they? So what sort of things are the hazards, the main hazards, and how do you mitigate for those?
We need to make sure that the labs are clean and tidy and there isn't stuff all over the floor. So when the students come in, their bags shouldn't be a trip hazard, that type of thing. As far as chemicals are concerned, once the teachers use that, then they should be removed from the room pretty, you know, as soon as possible. I mean, I don't have anything to do with chemicals, so, you know, that would be a chemistry technician that would deal with that. We have copies of the lab rules which are around the room, and each student's got those lab rules in the front of their exercise book. And so if the teacher's doing something where they feel they need to be reminded of them, then they'll do that at the start of the lesson. It can be a minefield, of course. But there are, the specific things that we've got to follow. Keeping the rooms tidy and things like that, I mean, that's really important. And explaining to the students about the equipment as well. I mean, there's certain things at the start of a lesson where a teacher will go over, as I said, what they should or shouldn't be doing with it as well. Because, you know, a lot of students in one room all doing stuff at once can be a little bit tricky.
Definitely. I mean, I can tell you, and this will horrify everybody. And I don't, when you hear the story, I say, I don't know if you're listening, sir, from year eight in 1992, but when I tell you the story, we might imagine he's long since departed. It was an experiment showing the effect of cigarette smoke on lungs, and he'd set up a bell jar and it had cotton wool in it. And he basically whipped out a packet of cigarettes and like lit one, had a couple of puffs, and then put it onto the bell jar, and it had a sort of a bellows or something to make it draw the air in, and we saw the cotton wool go all black. But I just thought, can you imagine lighting up?
Oh, I would.
I must have been 13 or 14, and it was
wonderful.
Very scandalous. But, you know.
Yeah, we don't do that anymore. No,
But on that note, is there anything like that that you can say, well, actually, times have really changed and we don't do that anymore? What would you say is something that you've noticed over the years has really changed?
I've only been a technician for 8 years, so that's probably not perhaps long enough to know anything. I suppose when we were with the pandemic, I guess things like cleaning the equipment, perhaps we're a little bit more aware of that sort of thing now. Obviously, when that was going on, once we got back to school and we were doing practicals, a lot of schools were not, but we wanted to try and do as much as we could. But stuff had to be quarantined, and, you know, if it had been used by one class, it couldn't be used by another class for another 48 hours and all of that. So I think that's made me, anyway, a lot more aware of making sure things are wiped down properly. I mean, we do, obviously, particularly with biology, it has to be wiped down because of what you're doing. But yes, I think that's had certainly a bit of more of an effect on me, just I'm a pretty clean and tidy person, of course, but, you know, it's just made me a little bit more aware.
Yeah, and of course, and I remember that we had signs up during the, you know, when we came back after the sort of the period of home education, we came back and everything was sanitized, except in the science labs where it was a fire risk. So, I mean, how did people cope when you went, you know, I do remember people were sort of told not to have the hand sanitizer out on the desk and things like that.
Because some of it's non-alcohol, so it's not flammable. So it would some of it was the stuff we had in the classrooms. Yeah, the students couldn't have their own out, but we had sanitizer in the classroom and wipes that were non-alcohol, so it wasn't a problem.
Oh no, that's because I always wondered about that, and I thought an interesting point because people, you know, it might not be something you'd immediately think of to have your hand sanitizer out on the desk, which of course at that time people did, didn't they? You know,
of course, yeah. And also water bottles. I mean, we don't have water bottles out on the desk because if a student knocks that over when you've got a something electrical out or anything out, I mean, you don't want them on the desk anyway, really, because if they do tip, they make a mess. But that's our type of thing. And certainly no eating. So in tutor time, the students wouldn't be allowed to have a snack or anything like that. So that, you know, we don't have that sort of thing in science. Either.
No, very, very wise, very sensible. I just wonder if you could tell us a little bit about maybe one of your favourite demonstrations or experiments that you've kind of been involved with. Anything you think, right, I really like this one, or conversely, and as well, one that you think, oh no, that one's really challenging. It often goes wrong.
I think I do like the air track, which is showing pressure. I don't know why I like that, but I just get quite excited. I actually really like the radioactive stuff as well. I mean, I do, you know, I'm not always in the room. I'd stand back from that, but I do really like that because I think, isn't it a banana that's the most radioactive, I think, something like
that. Yeah, you can't eat a lot of them, can you?
Yeah, something like that. I just love it. I just love all the different things that we do. I think I like the variety of it. The Van de Graaff is always fun. We're very careful with it.
The static electricity.
It is. And then, I mean, we don't do it now because when I first, that was something that's changed actually, where the students used to stand, you know, put their hands on it and their hair would stand
that
up.
I've had that done to me again. Yeah. I think my school, 1992, was the year for risk in Harrow.
Okay. It sounds like it. we don't do that. I mean, the teacher might do it, but we don't do that.
Why is that? What's the reason?
I think it's just the CLEEP's guidelines have asked us not to do that now. So something's happened somewhere, hasn't it, where if you've got a teacher or a student or anybody with a pacemaker.
Yeah, of course.
In fact, we don't even have the Van de Graaff out at open evenings now. Because if someone was to have a pacemaker, it could, I mean, it's just a potential risk, isn't it, which you're trying to to mitigate, actually.
No, that's really interesting, because you do, I'm going to sort of talk about open evening, and I know that we hadn't really talked about this in advance, but because you do set fire to the jelly babies, don't you? Is that...
They do in biology, they do set fire to jelly babies. Yes, that is the most popular, screaming jelly babies. Whatever they do, it makes them scream. It's a bit sad, really. It's like a baby crying.
Come on down to philosophy. We're running people over with a train, so, I don't...
it's all fun. And things with the bubbling custard that's jumping up and down and all sorts of fun games. Yeah, all sorts of fun.
Oh, thank you. So in terms of, your role, and, you've been in the school, you say, 8 years, and you've had your tutor time role as well. You know, what would you say is the most enjoyable aspect of your job?
It is a variety, actually. Every day is different. We've got very supportive colleagues. We do work as a team, and all the techs, or the unfortunate thing is we're on a different floor. Physics is downstairs, biology and chemistry is upstairs. If we ever get refurbished, if we ever get the money to refurbish, then we will be all together on one floor. But we do work as a team, and we're also part of the Bucks Technician Network, which is run by the senior technician at one of the other secondary schools over in Princess Risborough Way. They meet once a term. I don't always go, either one of the other techs will go to the meetings, or, we don't all go to every meeting. And we have hosted it before. So we just meet in one of the secondary schools. There's some demos there. It gives us ideas. It gives us an idea to, ideas for all sorts of things, but just also to meet with other techs, which is really useful. It makes you realise how well resourced we are as well. We're very, very fortunate because, we've got some quite expensive equipment, but they often show you how to make, bits of equipment that, and we think, we have in fact got one of those, and we're very fortunate when we do make stuff. We've got, as I said, we've got a lot of very old stuff that's been made in the past by different techs or teachers. But it's quite nice to meet up with them. And then you realise the variety of the job, just the different things that you can get involved in, really, just throughout the day. No 2 days are the same. But having supportive colleagues and it's those teachers and the techs as well, and working as a team is it makes it for a good day's work. I'm not saying it's not stressful, because it sometimes can be and busy. It's the variety, really, I would say.
That's brilliant. Thank you. One of the things that I'm just thinking off the top of my head in terms of equipment, because I'm thinking of things like polystyrene cups, for example. I don't know if that was ever anything that crossed your path, but I'm aware that those kind of things just aren't around and available anymore, because obviously they're phased out due to environmental concerns. Has the kind of the availability of resources changed, do you think, over the years?
Things like plastic straws we wouldn't use anymore, but we have got some paper straws. So I would think you can adapt things. Polystyrene cups, we wouldn't have. You can probably still buy packets of plastic cups for things. We're very aware of that. We don't waste stuff. We try to reuse things and repair things as well. Things like wires, they're tricky to solder and repair, but you can't keep buying new things. And the other thing is that the students are very, very good at, obviously guided by the teacher, at putting the stuff back as they found it. And they do accidentally pop little things in their pencil cases. They don't mean to, as they're packing up. They might pop something in their pencil case or drop it on the floor. And so we do count everything out and in. because we don't want to lose stuff. But equally, but again, it is sustainability. We don't want to lose it because we don't want to have to buy more, but also just because, you know, we want sustainability. So that's really important.
And yeah, I know. And the students I know have an eco club as well. So I'm sure that they themselves are, you know, self-aware. I don't know how the conscientiousness of eco club, let's say on a Tuesday, transfers to rushing to join the dinner queue on a Friday, but because we all know adolescents.
Yes.
But no, I know that it's something that the students are very. They take very seriously, and obviously we have to be mindful for sustainability and for sort of, you know, economic concerns as well, don't we?
Oh yes, definitely. Yeah, I mean, there are, I suppose, some of the changes that I've noticed are things like photocopying, you know, don't do so much. And but that's apart from the budgeting side of it. Again, the sustainability of it. Do you really need to photocopy endless sheets of paper when it can be projected up on the board? I mean, obviously, some of the practicals where the students are following the sheet and they're writing on it and they need to refer back to that to revise or whatever they're doing with it, that's fine. But, you know, a lot of the time we do project the instructions up onto the board so that they're following that rather than, you know, copying endless paper. As you say, apart from cost, it's the sustainability of that. We shouldn't be using paper to that extent. I've got a bit of an obsession about recycling. I mean, I have a little recycling box in the prep room for anybody's drink, you know, the staff, if they had a can of something or other. Put that in the bin, you know, it must get, you know, it's got to go in my recycling box. So I'm a little bit sort of hot on that. I'm a little bit of a warrior on that myself.
Wow, actually. good for you.
Yeah.
You know,
I don't think my own children would agree with that because I'm constantly nagging them, but
well, you know, I think it comes to us all where we do want to try and you know, do our bit, and I'm sure they will appreciate it, because I mean I don't know, you can tell me a little bit more or not as much as you want to about your sort of more holistic relationship with the school, shall we say, because I know that you have had more than just a professional interest.
Yeah, in what way? With my children, you mean?
Yeah, well, I mean, say as much or as little as you'd like, because I just want to sort of capture the whole kind of your school life, really.
In terms of what I do in
well, in terms of how you have how it's been with, so I'm not sure exactly whether you joined the school after your children were there and how
I wasn't sure what you're referring to. That's fine. So my eldest son joined about 2001, and I had another two sons that went through the school. But I joined as the youngest one left, actually.
I see. Okay.
Which is probably quite they probably were quite pleased about that. They were, as I said, one of them was the one that suggested the job when they saw it. So yes, I've had a very long connection with the school. And it's, you know, it's a lovely place to be. It's warm and it's welcoming, and I think it's the I'm trying to think how to describe it, really, the extracurricular stuff that goes on on top of everything. I mean, what I've taken part in since I've been there is things like Movember, which is raising money for men's health. So that was last November. One of the staff set up a team for that.
What was your involvement in that then? Because I'm presuming it wasn't to grow a handlebar moustache.
It wasn't to grow a handlebar. No, it's evolved from that. I think that's how it started.
Yes,
actually, but it has evolved, and it's now just focusing on raising money for men's health. Both mental and physical health, and I have got three sons, so I'm a little bit more invested in that. But one of the staff set up a team. I already do about 13,000, 14,000 steps a day when I'm at work, just because I'm moving around the school and up and downstairs and, you know, goodness knows what. But it was really to, increase your exercise. I'm fortunate that I'm a member of the gym. We do get subsidised membership for the gym as part of the wellbeing for staff, which is a very lovely thing to have. So as a team, we were all just uploading what we'd done every day, became a little bit competitive for some people. But the opportunity to get involved in things like that is brilliant. As I say, you know, being a co-tutor, I was able to do that. Not long after I started, so it's probably about 6-7 years ago, the subject leader for physics and myself and two sixth formers went up to the local primary school and we did some demonstrations. In fact, we took the Van de Graaff at that point with us to the year six students so that they could have a little taster of what goes on in science before they joined their secondary schools. So obviously not all the students would be coming to our school, but they would all be going to a secondary school and be doing some science. So we did some little demos, little circuits, things like that to show the students. And that was really fun. And it's really lovely to get involved in that sort of thing as well, you know, to have the opportunity if you want to. I mean, you don't have to. But I think if you're going to be part of the community of the school, then it's important to sort of get a little bit involved where time allows.
No, that's brilliant. Thank you. I mean, I wonder if because we've got about sort of just under 15 minutes left. I've got to play the adverts again in just a minute. But before I do, I wonder if you could tell us what would you say was your most memorable experience or rewarding experience that you've had whilst working as a science technician?
I would say probably going up to the primary school, actually. I really enjoyed that. I really enjoyed going up and showing them. They were so excited. I mean, when the year sevens join in September, they're always very excited. They're very excited in science. You know, they're very excited to see a Bunsen burner. It's all very exciting. And I really love that wonder and that awe, and because it's all new to them. Obviously, you know, teenagers are teenagers, and as they go on, they become a bit lackadaisical about things, but they, in their hearts, they're still a little bit excited about it, you know, but they just don't want to show it. But I do love that year seven, you know, those younger ones when they come in and they're absolute awe and excitement about all the new experiences. It's wonderful to see. I really enjoy seeing that. It's lovely.
Oh, brilliant. That's really great. I'm just going to play our messages one more time. It's only going to be just for a couple of minutes. And then when we come back, and you can think about this just while we're muted, what advice do you think you might give to somebody who's considering applying for a job as a science technician? So we'll come back to that question in just a moment.
I've always considered myself to be a caring head teacher who acts sensitively to support staff mental health. But what I found increasingly difficult was managing the negative impact on staff mental health when resolving issues related to their employment or daily work. Heartfelt Leadership has been developed by TeachWell Toolkit as a handbook to support head teachers to overcome the challenges of school improvement while supporting staff well-being. We know that difficult conversations can quickly turn into conflict if procedures are not fully transparent, understood, and followed. Our handbook takes you through step-by-step processes while maintaining mutual respect, avoiding conflict, and finding solutions.
At Bloomsbury Education, we're passionate about supporting teachers with high-quality professional development books from leading experts. Whether you're navigating your first crucial years as an early career teacher or a more experienced teacher looking to refresh your practice or take a step up into leadership, our award-winning books are here to help. We publish practical books to support teaching across primary and secondary, from the very best in research-led practice to trusted advice on inclusivity, behaviour and curriculum design. Visit the Bloomsbury Education website at bloomsbury.com/education to find out more and use code BLOOMTTR24 to save 20% on all education titles. Bloomsbury Education, books for every step of your teaching journey.
So we're back. We've just got about 10 minutes left of the show. And Jill, I just wonder, I posed a question just before we went to the adverts about what advice you might give to anyone wanting to become a science technician. I wonder if you could share your thoughts on that, please.
You need to be prepared to get your hands dirty, I have to say. If you think it's just sort of doing little experiments and putting bits of celery and things and whatever biology do and so on, you know, you've got to be prepared to, you know, get your hands dirty. And you have to, I feel you have to be quite organised. I am an organised person. And, you know, it's a busy job. We have struggled to recruit because it's not desperately well paid. And I think that is a bit, you know, that is a real shame. Because I think if it could be recognised a bit more, not by the school, I mean, it's out of the school's hands, but as a profession, I'm not sure someone would go into it as a career because it's often a stepping stone into teaching, which is great for, as far as teaching is concerned. But it's I think in some ways it is a little bit undervalued. I mean, you sort of said that at the, you know, suggested that at the beginning, really, which is a real shame. Because it's valuable. I mean, as far as the required practicals are concerned for students, the teacher can do a demo, but sometimes you have to, depending what it is, but we, as much as possible, and most of the time, will do a full practical for students to do, because it's much more valuable learning, you know, that topic if you're there actually doing the experiment. And, you know, there's an enormous amount of work that goes into preparing that stuff, getting it out, carrying it around. And I think, you know, it's a bit of a shame that sometimes it's undervalued in that way, really. But, you know, it's a brilliant job. It's varied, you know, it as long as you've got supportive colleagues. I'm sure some people are listening and feel that perhaps that they're not as supported, but we are very fortunate that we are, and that does come from the top, the team leader. And I think, you know, it's a great job. But you do need to be prepared to be adaptable, and for things to change sometimes quickly. You have to have quite a degree of patience as well. I think it's, you know, it's valuable. It's a great job, and I've been very fortunate, you know, or I'm very fortunate to be doing it. So,
oh, brilliant! Thank you. I mean, we've just, I'm going to just open it up. I don't know if there's anybody listening who would like to ring in, who would like to share their views. You're very welcome to do so by downloading the Podbean app and going to ttradio.org and clicking listen live, and would be lovely to hear from you either in the chat or to ring in. But while we wait to see if anyone will do that, I just wonder, Jill, I wonder what your views are. Is there anything you would wish to see happen? Perhaps you've already mentioned the sort of the remuneration package. We can all agree that there's not enough money sloshing about in education, and there hasn't been for a very long time, which is detrimental, I think, to everybody involved. But what else would you like to see change, or perhaps changes that you don't agree with or anything like that, or just about education in general?
I mean, there isn't enough money, is there? That's absolutely right. And I think it's getting worse as well. I think that, you know, education is the whatever government's in is saying it's important, but sometimes it doesn't feel that way when this is cut or that's cut. I mean, it's very difficult with an economic situation that we're in as well, because obviously everybody's trying to save money. One of the things I was thinking about was we did have a problem in the department with somebody that was off for a while for, you know, valuable reason they were off. But even though we were sort of working one short for a while, the students were never disadvantaged by that. You know, we did everything we could. We all pulled together. Sometimes we worked a little bit longer than our hours because it is more set hours. It's not with teaching where you just be working 24 hours a day. So, you know, it is pretty set hours, but, you know, we'd always pull together. But of course, the more you do that, then the more, you know, it's relied upon. I mean, the school absolutely supported us and brought in a couple of gap year students, which we've got this year. Lovely couple of lads, absolutely wonderful, helping us out. So they did everything they could to help us in that situation. So we were very well supported. And, you know, the main thing is the students. That's what we're there for. We're there to make sure that they have a great experience in science and they enjoy their practicals. And, you know, we work around it as all teachers, you know, anyone in the not necessarily teachers, but anyone in the teaching profession does, you know, or education.
Absolutely. And so maybe if you, just to finish off, if you had a magic wand and they said you've got funding X, where would you spend it?
Well, in as far as science is concerned, in having the refurbishment for us, you know, being on two floors isn't ideal. It's fine. I mean, we work okay with it, you know, but that would be great. I can probably only really speak for science. I was going to ask you actually that when you have tutor time, do the students talk about science? Do they?
It depends what they've been doing. I mean, certainly they will mention if they've been, you know, preparing for an exam, or if they've just had an exam, they will talk about the various questions that came up and they will sort of revise. It's quite interesting actually, because one of the modules that I teach, and it's not in tutor time, but in philosophy and ethics, we actually do a module on the philosophy of science. And okay. would spend quite a lot of time looking at sort of various bits and pieces like Big Bang hypothesis and sort of trying to unpick the language around that and, you know, what science can do and the scientific method and things like that. And I think I always feel slightly amused that students look at me with slight suspicion because they're a bit surprised that just a boring old RE teacher would know quite so much about science, but it was part of my degree, so I feel a bit like I can hold my own in a conversation with a 14-year-old about the sort of biology and physics and so on. So yeah, I think they do hold science very much as the way they view the world and as necessary and as interesting and as really fundamental. And certainly they are engaged with it whenever I've got some time when they are doing private study. The science books do come out and they are interested in discussing it and, you know, helping each other revise and so on. So, I do think it's a well-regarded, enjoyable opportunity that our students are lucky to have. So, you know, on their behalf, I think, you know, thank you, because whatever's going on, I was going to say up there, but on two floors is up there and down there, they certainly seem to be benefiting from it. And, I think good numbers choose A-level as well, don't they?
They do. We do have a lot of A-level students, which is brilliant, yeah. And that's why one reason why it was three separate science technicians. But as I say, that's probably going to change so that we can sort of all cover each other in the future. But that hasn't quite been decided. But that's one of the reasons why it's often the grammar schools are have the three separate science technicians, possibly because they have more A-level students. Yeah.
Yeah. Sure, and you need that sort of specialism.
Specialism.
Thank you so much, Jill. It's been a real pleasure talking to you, and, you know, thank you for all that you do. And it's been really interesting because as teachers, it's very easy for us to be a bit not ostrich-like, but just very focused on what we've got to do next. And, you know, I do want to sort of give a shout out to all support staff and technicians and support staff of all kinds out there, because we really couldn't do it we couldn't do it without you guys. And it's really important that support staff are recognised for the brilliant work that they do, because school just, you know, if everyone who works in support didn't come in tomorrow, it would fall apart.
But you know, it's two-way and the teachers are very supportive as well. Excuse me. So, you know, it's a two-way relationship for sure.
All right. Well, that's been so brilliant. And thank you, Jill. I'll see you very soon, I'm sure. Thank you so much for calling in this evening and sharing your views with us. And I know that our listeners are going to really appreciate the opportunity to have that insight into the role of the science technician. So thank you.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you very much. And it leaves it for me to say that brings us to the end of today's Late Late Show. Many thanks to today's special guest, Jill Batsman, and to all of you who've joined us live. Remember, there are Teachers Talk radio shows all through the week with plenty of opportunities to listen to all kinds of topics across all kinds of education subjects. Teachers talking to teachers is what we are all about here. Join me again fortnightly at the same time. Bye for now.
You've been listening to Teachers Talk Radio. Tune in live and listen back at ttradio.org. We look forward to hearing from you next time on Teachers Talk Radio.